Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of December 22nd and 29th. This week we took a trip up to New Haven, Connecticut, where we sat in on a press conference with former Prime Minister Tony Blair, who's been teaching a class on faith and globalization that's co-sponsored by the Yale Divinity School and the Yale School of Management. Mr. Blair talked a bit about the class and also various issues related to faith in the modern world. You'll notice there's a little sound in the background from pictures being taken and some of Mr. Blair's handlers coming in. We apologize for that. Questions were posed by myself and other members of the media in attendance.
I'm wondering if I noticed that you go to common values between religions, and that President Bush appeals to the values inherent in human dignity. You appeal sort of a common ideology. He appeals to what appears in a person. So, wondering if is there a difference, and does it make any difference, or is it really the same?
Yeah, I think it's different facets of the same approach. Right? I mean, basically the thesis, if you like, I mean, of the course. I mean, the course is in part to explore aspects of faith and globalization, like faith in a liberal democracy, like faith in human rights, and so on. But it's also to explore a thesis, and the thesis is that globalization operates to push people together, to blur distinctions between different nations and cultures, that it's helping create a multi-faith society, and that faith either in those circumstances becomes a constructive and progressive force that can help provide globalization with a human face and with some spiritual capital, which is important, or alternatively, it can be a reactionary and destructive force that pulls people apart. And so that's, you know, the reason why I think the whole interfaith space is so important is that it is by, in a multi-faith society, it is by people understanding each other that they learn to respect each other, and it's by respecting each other that you get to peaceful coexistence.
What responsibility do sort of agents of globalization as transnational corporations, governments, things like this, have to contribute to being open to receiving the human face that faith might want to put on it?
One of the students just asked me a question, which is about the course and the degree to which it was different as a course through the global economic crisis. Mm-hmm. And actually, it did change the nature of it somewhat, in that one of the things that we examined is the degree to which globalization, that is a fact and is driven by people, requires values mm-hmm. to succeed. And whereas you might have said a year ago or 2 years ago that globalization is an impersonal mm-hmm. Impulse, it's basically goes where it wants to go. It, you know, it operates at a purely material level. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the things we've learned through this global economic crisis is the importance of key values: trust, mm-hmm. confidence, mm-hmm. The ability to rely on the word of the other person. And I think I think one developing part of this, therefore, is not merely how in an era of globalization we need for peaceful coexistence, for there to be cooperation and understanding between faiths, mm-hmm. but also the degree to which, in order to make globalization work, we need values. Mm-hmm. Now, faith is not the only means by which those values can mm-hmm. be bestowed on the process of globalization, but it is one way. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, I mean, I have started to have conversations with business people mm-hmm. about the role that religious faith can play. You know, they're people of faith, and mm-hmm. the need to have some sense of spiritual capital as an important part of building both human capital and indeed a thriving system.
Now, as you know, some of the bestsellers here in the United States are books like Daniel Dennett's book, Richard Dawkins' book, posing a critique of faith. I was wondering whether you read any of those books in your class and how you would respond to the argument by Christopher Hitchens makes that religion poisons everything.
I would say, first of all, yes, we certainly do look at that, and I think what's very important is that people of faith are open to a dialogue with people who have no faith. Mm-hmm. or even are militantly against faith. My dad's an atheist, so quite militant about it. So I kind of had that discussion as I was growing up, and it is perfectly possible to look for and find examples of religious faith being negative and destructive and reactionary. It is, however, also possible to find examples of religious faith inspiring people to do great things, great works of compassion, of social progress, of enlightenment. And in fact, I think the best-selling book in America in recent years has been The Purpose-Driven Life,
sure,
by Rick Warren. So I think that's probably outsold
all those other ones.
Yeah, put together.
Yeah.
Do you think Rick Warren's activities an example of faith in globalization, and how would you characterize his activities?
Well, I'm a great fan of Rick's, and he's on the advisory council for my foundation, and I think he provides a really inspirational example of somebody who can combine a very direct and simple way of explaining things to being prepared to involve themselves in major global issues. But I also think he represents an evolution of religious organization in which people are prepared to encounter those of different faiths and try to understand and learn about them and be educated about them. And, there is for example, in the work that my foundation does in fighting malaria in Africa, I mean, we're trying to, our purpose, the Yale thing is about education, but another part of my foundation is about interfaith encounters through action. And the use, for example, of churches and mosques as distribution centers for bed nets and medicines and health workers in sub-Saharan Africa is a major way in which people of faith can play a role in tackling major issues. So, the other thing that's really interesting, we're going to expand the work we do now for next year. My faith foundation will actually base its American operations really here at Yale. We'll have some full-time staff here. Yale itself is going to expand the work of its center, which deals with issues to do with faith and culture and so on. We will spin off a whole series of bits of research about this that have arisen out of what we're doing. We've got tie-ups now that we're beginning with other universities, which we will be announcing shortly, and I think we will be able to fashion this course into a sort of module that can be taken and amended in different parts of the world. But one of the interesting things we have found in the course of researching the course is that in the whole thesis, which was very prevalent in, I think, the 80s and 90s, which is that as globalization gathered pace and as the world got more prosperous, that faith would decline and we would become secular. And actually, that is not what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And faith, part of the purpose of the course is to say also to people who are not of faith, faith does matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a voice, and it's sensible to hear that voice.
Mm-hmm.
How would you, speak to a person of non-faith? How would you, what kind of, to be in alliances with you, let's say Chris Hedges or one of these guys,
mm-hmm.
how would you say, well, come here, work with me on this? How would you do that?
I think that's very easy, actually, because I think that even if people have no faith or are anti-faith, they can see that faith matters.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, everyone has an interest in peaceful coexistence. And if you look at the trouble spots of the world today, you'd have to say there is a significant religious dimension to most of them. And so even if you're not someone of faith yourself, I think you can see the practical and sensible purpose of bringing people of different faiths into greater understanding of and respect for each other. So, I find it perfectly easy to have a dialogue or a conversation with Christopher and people who take a view that religion's a bad thing, because even if they take the view that religion's a bad thing, they've got to accept it is a thing. It's not going away.
Right.
Now, whether you then evolve that into showing how religion can be a positive force for good, which I believe it can be, is another matter. I also think it's very important that I always say this to people. When people talk about religion as a source of conflict, I mean, secular political ideology almost destroyed the world in the 20th century. So I'm afraid extremism is not limited to those of religious belief. Mm-hmm. Now, it happens that the most obvious, the 20th century, in my view, was a century of fundamental political ideology. I think the question of the 21st century will be, is there a way that we can build spiritual capital? Because I think there is a yearning within humanity for that. But do that in a way that is respectful of the fact that people come from many different faith traditions.
Has your view of anything changed because of the students? Have students challenged you on some issues, e.g. Iraq, etc., etc.? I'm just curious about...
We've had discussions on all of that, but I think they'd be more really to the point on faith and globalization. So, for example, we had a very spirited debate about the degree to which it's possible to respect somebody of another faith if you believe yours is the only true faith, which is an interesting concept in itself. And then this issue to do with globalization and values, I think I somewhat amended my view of that in the light of the discussion, because I probably would have been, a year ago myself in the category of saying, well, look, I prefer globalization to have values. I believe it would be a good thing if it did, but it's not necessary for it to work that it does. But I think now I would take a far clearer view that there is a necessity for a clear value-based globalization in order for it to be effective, not merely in order for it to be just. I mean, I would have always made the case for values and globalization on the basis of justice. I think I would make it now on the basis of efficacy. I think that was an interesting dimension that we opened up. And then I think, we had some very interesting debates as well about the degree to which, faith and public life and the degree to which, religious faith should be allowed to occupy a space in public life in a liberal democracy, where a lot of people would argue. There's one very strong school of thought that says, no, you leave your religion out. And so, I think one of the things I think that is the reason why we will sort of expand all this next year is that I think the thing that has been most revealed during the course of the course of seminars is the total saliency of this issue for today's world. I mean, it's just, and indeed as every event has happened in the past months, it has underscored that. So I think next year we will be doing this in an even more enhanced way, and probably linking up with other universities around the world to do it too.
As a Catholic, how do you assess your own church's sort of place in relation to globalization? What are the ways in which it's contributing constructively to the globalizing process? What are the ways it may be detracting from that process?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I think one of the interesting things that we're exploring, and probably will explore even more next year, is the degree to which organized religion actually assists this process or can get in the way of it sometimes. I mean, I would say that a church like the Catholic Church does fantastic work on the ground. I mean, the Vatican is now taking up the Common Word Initiative and other interfaith initiatives. But there's always, in all religions, a lot of nervousness about the interfaith idea, in case people think, well, if you're out there talking to other people about their faith, does that kind of diminish your own, or your own gets contaminated in some way? Now, one of the really interesting things, that because the students on the course are all of different faiths, some no faith, but most I think are of a faith, but will be different faiths. And one of the things that's really interesting is that I think it's a very common experience that people have found their own faith enriched by the conversation about the faith of someone else. And that's an interesting reflection on why the interfaith idea, which is now obviously being taken up in the Islamic world in a big way because of King Abdullah's initiative from Saudi Arabia and so on. This is a growing platform of action and thought and encounter, precisely because people people see this both as a way of making the world work more peacefully, but also actually it does enrich your own faith. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How have you been personally influenced by Catholic social teaching, and how has that affected your approach to some of these issues?
I think you divide that into two categories, really. There's certain issues upon which, you know, I've taken stem cell research, that I've taken positions in government, and I don't sort of hide from those at all. On the other hand, certainly the Church's social teaching, in the sense of the obligation of human compassion towards others, yeah, it's been very influential on me. Mm-hmm. But I think this is, you guys are all religious correspondents.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think there is a way of starting to describe what's happening in this space that makes it really newsworthy and interesting for people. And, you know, I think there is a big gap between the way that a lot of leading opinion formers look at this issue, which is, that's a bit weird, let's leave it to one side, and the way that people look at this issue, which is that they're really interested in it. And I have a completely clear instinct, not merely about the importance of this issue, but that the fact that it will in time be seen to be a major question, and possibly the defining question of the 21st century.
I want to thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the America Magazine podcast. We want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and remind you that our next podcast will be along with the January 5th through 12th edition, when we'll be introducing the new redesign of the print magazine, which coincides with our centennial year. Reminder that you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reed for America Magazine.